You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours, sharing music and voices from genres and cultures around the world, reflecting you and the rest of your community. You make CJSF diverse.
Welcome to Electronic Intifada Radio. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. On this episode, Gaza Betrayed, we speak with international human rights lawyer Craig Mulciber about the United Nations' adoption of Trump's Gaza plan.
That is not about protecting the victims of the genocide, it's about protecting the perpetrators of the genocide. It's not about holding the perpetrators accountable, it's about disempowering and punishing the survivors. The governments of the world have again betrayed the Palestinian people.
On the Resistance Report, John Elmer covers ongoing Israeli ceasefire violations.
The idea was to agree to phase one and then move on to negotiations for phase two, not to just barrel ahead with a colonial arrangement. So upholding the agreement by the resistance is obviously only a one-sided affair.
Ali Abonima reports that extreme torture and sexual violence against Palestinian prisoners is a systematic policy as part of Israel's genocide.
Thousands of Palestinians are still held in these military detention camps and prisons with no access from human rights organizations or from the International Red Cross. So all the abuses are still continuing.
This is Electronic Intifada Radio. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. This episode highlights the news, interviews, and reports from our live stream broadcast on November 20th, 2025. Later in the show, we'll be joined by international human rights lawyer Craig Mulciber to discuss the resolution adopted by the United Nations Security Council and what may come next. Ali Abonima reports on Palestinians from Gaza, recently released from Israeli detention, who have given harrowing descriptions of sexual torture by their Israeli captors. And on the Resistance Report, John Elmer covers the Israeli military's use of the Yellow Line as pretext to continue destroying eastern Gaza. But first, we're hearing families in Khan Yunis awaiting dozens of medical patients who are receiving treatment in hospitals in occupied East Jerusalem, returning to Gaza on buses through the Kerem Abu Salem or Kerem Shalom crossing. Amid the joy and relief of their families, these patients come back to a landscape of utter destruction and a collapsed healthcare system with limited access to basic medication and treatments. The Electronic Intifada's contributor, Donya Abu Sita, sent us this report.
Imagine leaving your home for just a few days to seek medical treatment, only to be separated from your family for 2 years. While you are away, they live under bombing and fire, moving from one tent to another, facing hunger, fear, and genocide. This is not fiction. It's the reality of dozens, perhaps hundreds of families from Gaza who left for treatment in hospitals in the West Bank before the war began. Then the border closed, and they become watching the news with a broken heart. On last Monday, I was studying by the light of my laptop screen, as we do in Gaza, since electricity has been cut off for 2 years. When I heard loud cheering from Nasser Hospital, I stepped out into the window and saw a crowd joyfully chanting. I thought it were welcoming home released prisoners, but the surprise came the next day. They weren't prisoners. They were patients who had finally returned to Gaza after 2 years of celebration, pain, and waiting. Imagine returning to your city, which you left carrying only the pain of your illnesses, and finding it only rubble. Imagine looking for your home and finding nothing. look for your sibling but not seeing them, searching for your mother and finding her buried under the rubble. This story are not exception. They are chapters in ongoing tragedy. Their story deserves to be written, read, and heard.
That was the Electronic Intifada's contributor, Doña Abusita, in Khan Yunis. Next, our executive director, Ali Abunima, reports that horrific sexual torture of Palestinian prisoners is systematic policy as part of Israel's genocide rather than isolated incidents.
Now, I do have to warn you that this segment will include frank discussion about sexual violence and torture. That's something I wrote about in my recent article, Palestinians Recount Gang Rapes by Israeli Soldiers and Dogs. Palestinians from Gaza recently released from Israeli detention have given harrowing descriptions of sexual torture by their Israeli captors, describing rapes by groups of soldiers, forced stripping, forced filming, and sexual assaults and rapes using objects and dogs. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights, which collected the testimonies in recent weeks, said they reflect a systematic policy as part of Israel's genocide and are not isolated incidents. PCHR published four testimonies from Palestinian rape victims identified only by initials. The accounts are very explicit, and I'm only going to give summaries that do not include the worst, most horrific details that can be found in the PCHR report or in my article. N.A., a 42-year-old mother, says she was stripped, restrained, and over a period of days was repeatedly sexually assaulted by multiple Israeli soldiers. She also describes being beaten, electrocuted, insulted, and filmed. She heard cameras clicking and was told her photos could be posted online. A.A., a 35-year-old man, reported that a trained dog was used in the sexual assault against him and that the experience caused him serious psychological and physical harm, including a head injury that was stitched up without anesthesia. T.O., a 41-year-old father, describes a soldier violently sexually assaulting him with an object and then doing other unspeakable acts. He says he bled as a result of the attack, was blindfolded, tied up, and moved to another location where he was repeatedly beaten along with other prisoners. M.A., an 18-year-old Palestinian male, says he was repeatedly sexually assaulted with an object and also witnessed similar attacks on other detainees held with him. He also mentions a dog being present during some of that abuse. As we've reported, very little of this has drawn much mainstream attention in the West, where politicians and media have focused on Israel's fake claims of rape on October 7th, something that we've covered extensively on the Electronic Intifada. But one of the very few cases of a Palestinian victim drawing mainstream attention involved a detainee gang raped and severely injured by a group of Israeli soldiers at Israel's Sde Teman detention camp. It came to light last year after several soldiers were arrested for the attack by Israeli military prosecutors, and a leaked video of the assault was broadcast on Israeli national television. After the video's release in August 2024, the UN Human Rights Office stated that it has, quote, documented a number of videos in recent months which show gross violations of the rights of Palestinians detained by Israel, including acts of ill treatment, torture, sexual violence, and rape. The Sde Teman video led to outrage in Israel, not about the attack itself, but in defense of the soldiers. It sparked so-called right-to-rape protests by Israelis demanding the soldiers' release, while senior officials justified their actions. Yifat Tomer Yerushalmi, the Israeli military prosecutor who leaked the video in a failed effort to tamp down the outrage over the soldiers' arrests, resigned last month and has been arrested and placed in home detention. She's being investigated over the leak. Now, what I want to bring to your attention now that has come to light since we reported on this story is comments from Ben Marmarelli speaking to Canadian journalist Samira Mohyeddin. Marmarelli represents a Palestinian prisoner held by Israel, and he says that his client, a Palestinian political prisoner, is being subjected to severe abuse, including repeated sexual violence. Here's a clip of Marmarelli commenting not on his own client in this clip, but on that infamous case of the rape of the Palestinian detainee seen in that video leaked in August 2024. Let's listen to him.
A more broader question about the treatment of Palestinian prisoners. Were you surprised at all with the leak of that video showing how prisoners are being treated in Sidi Timan?
Listen, what they did is they found a scapegoat. Because they rape all of the prisoners, in Sidi Timan especially. And not only that they rape all of the prisoners, they have cameras filming 24/7. So if they really wanted to act against the rape and the beatings and the torture, we could have done this years ago. They don't do it. And what they did is, because there was such international fallout, they decided to pick just one case and go after it. Mm. By the way, they dropped the ball on that as well, because that case is over. Nobody's taken to court on this case. The only case that was leaked, they released one of the detainees. That's really the, instead of Iman's detainees, it's under the IDF. It's not under the IPS. Now, instead of Iman, they released the victim of this case without taking his testimony. So if you understand a little bit about criminal law, that means the case is over.
Right.
So that's Israeli lawyer Ben Marmarelli talking to Samira Mohyeddin and alleging that they rape all of the prisoners. And I want to share some of the other comments Marmarelli made in that interview about his own client, another Palestinian political prisoner. And Ben Marmarelli says, quote, "It's gotten to the point where he asks me not to come anymore because every time I come, they rape him." Marmarelli added that sexual assaults are only part of a bigger pattern of torture and abuse. He says, quote, "Everyone talks about the rape like it's the big issue. The rape is not the big issue. The rape is the least of his problems," Marmarelli said. "The issue is the conditions of the prisoners, and the rape is just one of the many pieces of the puzzle, which is Israel torturing the Palestinian prisoners." Marmarelli also said his client had showed him boot marks on his back, deep marks on his wrists from tight handcuffs, and bruises all over his body. He also alleges that sexual assaults occur once every few weeks and appear to coincide with the lawyer's visits. Marmarelli says Palestinian political prisoners don't get any visits for years. Their only connection to the outside world is a lawyer's visit. And even that, according to him, is now too dangerous because of the retaliation that Israel meets out. And I want to point to another story that came out from the Associated Press. The headline, "Palestinian deaths in Israeli custody have surged. A prison guard describes rampant abuse." And the Associated Press actually published an account given by a former Israeli prison guard. And here's what the Associated Press says. "The former guard at a military prison notorious for its harsh treatment of Palestinians told the AP detainees were routinely shackled with chains and kicked and hit with batons, and that the facility has been dubbed a graveyard because so many prisoners were dying there. He agreed to talk to AP to raise awareness of violence in Israeli prisons and spoke on condition of anonymity due to fear of reprisal." And you'll recall that, as we've reported in recent weeks, since the so-called ceasefire came into effect in Gaza on October 10th, Israel has returned dozens of bodies of Palestinian detainees that were mutilated, decomposed, and disfigured, but showed signs of torture, gagging, blindfolding, even had things tied around their necks, suggestive of really horrific abuse and mistreatment. And many of these bodies have been buried in Gaza without being identified because their condition was so bad. Meanwhile, what's happening in Israel? Well, rapists, torturers continue to be celebrated. And one example of that is the suspect in that notorious Sidit Himan rape case that was shown in the video leaked in August 2024 being celebrated and received as heroes at a recent court hearing. Let's take a look at that. What a sick, sick society. Those scenes of celebration are matched by many comments from senior Israeli politicians praising these suspects, dehumanizing Palestinian prisoners. And as the Palestinian Center for Human Rights points out, thousands of Palestinians are still held in these military detention camps and prisons with no access from human rights organizations or from the International Red Cross. So all the abuses that we've just talked about are still continuing. All of this is under the banner of what Donald Trump calls a ceasefire and peace. So keep the Palestinian prisoners in your thoughts. Keep demanding their freedom. They are far from freedom and they're still suffering horrendous abuse in Israeli detention.
That was our executive director, Ali Abu Nima. Still to come on Electronic Intifada Radio, international human rights lawyer Craig Mokhiber unpacks Resolution 2803 as the UN embraces colonialism. But before we get to that, the Electronic Intifada's John Elmer reports on the ongoing Israeli ceasefire violations as the Qassam shadow units maintain their promise to return fallen Israeli captives.
This is the resistance report for day 776 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. It's also day 42 of the ceasefire that Israel has violated now more than 400 times, killing and wounding 1,000 Palestinians in the past 41 days. So we're seeing shadow unit soldiers from the Qassam Brigade. The shadow unit looks after prisoners. So these recovery operations are taking place in Rafah, Khan Yunis, Zeytun, and Shujaiya in Gaza City. This much-needed heavy machinery is being used to find Israelis right now and is not being used for recovery of Palestinians. There's more than 10,000 we know are buried in rubble because of Israel's genocide. So there have been 26 out of 28 of the fallen captives have been returned. All 20 soldiers were returned, and almost all of the fallen captives are also soldiers, or as the Israelis said the other day, according to information and intelligence available to the IDF, Command Sergeant Major Lior Rudolph was a deputy security coordinator and a member of the Nur Yitzhak Rapid Response Team, and he fell in battle defending his kibbutz on October 7th. So we're getting soldiers and security officials. The exchange is 15 to 1 for the bodies, and those Palestinian bodies are returned, and only a fraction of them could be identified because of the torture and mutilation and executions that they suffered. That is the Qassam Brigade's obligation under the first phase of this agreement. They signed on to this ceasefire agreement in order to end the genocide on their people, to end the aggression. The idea was to agree to phase one and then move on to negotiations for phase two, not to just barrel ahead with a colonial arrangement. So upholding the agreement by the resistance is obviously only a one-sided affair. Asim Al-Nabi, who we know as a guest on this program, a regular contributor to the Electronic Intifada, and an engineer at the Gaza municipality, who is now reporting for Al Arabi Television. He did a report using municipality know-how to go neighborhood by neighborhood along the yellow line. And he found in his inaugural report for Al Arabi that 62% of Gaza is actually under control, an additional 9% from what was supposed to be the yellow line that was agreed to has been upheld. The Israelis are pushing that even further. There was a statement recently by Hamas on the ceasefire that says the occupation continues on a daily basis to demolish homes located inside areas of controls outside the yellow line on the eastern side in a clear, explicit breach of the ceasefire agreement. These violations have continued for a full month without stopping, leading to widespread destruction of citizens' property inside that area. Hamas also added that the occupation has not adhered to the agreed-upon withdrawal line for its first phase. It has exceeded the yellow line by an estimated 33 square kilometers, which includes fire control within distances ranging from 400 to 1,000 meters inside the line and the incursion of military vehicles into these areas. The occupation has also placed concrete blocks that exceed the yellow line by distances ranging from 200 to 800 meters along the temporary line. The United States Central Command Civil Military Coordination Center in Kiryat Gat, which is housing right now 200 United States soldiers, as well as officials from other countries. And the map that they're using for their operational purposes looks to be an expanded yellow line from the previous maps. And in this coordination center, there was a Washington Post story explaining how the coordination would work and how the American headquarters would function. And after that story came out, the Israeli security sources immediately went to Army Radio to say this. This is a report from Army Radio. The political echelon in Israel will continue to make exclusive decisions about the types of materials allowed and forbidden to enter the Strip, and the entire coordination system of international organizations at the UN for humanitarian aid trucks will continue to operate through the coordination of government activities in the territories, COGAT. So the Israeli Defense Forces will be in full control of the aid. The Washington Post story and many of the ways that Trump talks about his plan is that the Americans are in charge of monitoring this. The Israelis made it very clear that that is not true. Israel further clarified that all security inspection processes of aid trucks and their contents will remain at the crossings under the control of Israeli security bodies, alongside taking necessary actions by security systems to reduce Hamas involvement in humanitarian aid. Also, the BBC has published satellite imagery, what it says are more than 1,500 buildings that have been destroyed on the eastern side of the yellow line. This is all destruction that has happened after the ceasefire was agreed to. So they're adding to what the UN estimates is 60 million tons of rubble. They've been adding to that since the ceasefire. And more than 300,000 homes were destroyed before the ceasefire ended. And now we see 1,500 more buildings destroyed since the ceasefire. There is enough rubble in Gaza to fill 13 Great Pyramids. The BBC says the new photos, the latest of which was taken on November 8th, showed the entire neighborhoods controlled by the Israeli Defense Forces have been leveled in less than a month. The actual number of destroyed buildings could be significantly higher, with satellite imagery for some areas being unavailable for BBC's assessment. That is something that Israel has done throughout this war and before, making satellite imagery difficult, and it's always low resolution. Back to the BBC, they say U.S. President Donald Trump's 20-point peace plan and the basis for the ceasefire stated that all military operations will be suspended. It's cut and dried. It's black and white. And he has since repeated that the war is over. And that is clearly not the case. BBC says we used a change detection algorithm to analyze radar images taken before and after the ceasefire to highlight these changes, which might indicate destruction, then manually counted visibly destroyed buildings. So labor-intensive process by BBC Verify it's good to have them doing this now, although it would have been nice to have this all throughout the war from BBC Verify. In any case, there are still negotiations ongoing for some 200, it's thought to be some 200 Qassam fighters or Palestinian resistance fighters in general in Rafah. Hamas said the other day that we have informed the mediators of our readiness to remove the fighters from behind the yellow line. And Qassam issued a full statement that says the occupation bears full responsibility for the clashes with our fighters in Rafah who are defending themselves inside an area under its control. The enemy must know that the principle of surrender and handing over oneself to the enemy does not exist in the lexicon of the Al-Qassam brigades. We place the mediators before their responsibilities and they must find a solution to ensure the continuation of the ceasefire, prevent the enemy from using flimsy pretexts to violate it and exploit that to target innocent and civilians in Gaza. The process of recovering bodies during the first phase took place under complex and extremely difficult circumstances. Despite this, we adhered to what was required of us in the agreement, which they have. The IDF Chief of Staff, Eyal Zamir, said that the military must be ready to seize additional territory in the Gaza Strip beyond the current ceasefire lines if necessary. In the Gaza Strip, we control more than 50% of the territory without controlling the population. The yellow line serves as an encirclement and control policy that we will continue to act to prevent Hamas's buildup and by our holding strategic terrain and all the gateways into Gaza, Zamir said during his visit to Rafah in southern Gaza. He added, if required, we must be prepared for rapid transition to a broad offensive and to seize territory in the Gaza Strip on the other side of the yellow line. We will continue to clear the area of Hamas infrastructure and enemy pockets. We will continue to insist that Hamas's rule will not exist on the other side of the border. Even if this takes time, we will pursue it and persist in the mission of dismantling Hamas and demilitarizing the Strip. So Israel clearly fully involved in this process, appears to be ready to go to war at any time, which is why they're taking the kind of actions with widespread airstrikes all across Gaza, killing and wounding hundreds of Palestinians. They don't believe that this civil military coordination center that the United States Central Command is overseeing is going to stop that. And that has been the case so far. We got a message from the Qassam Brigades this week, a video message that shows the resilience of the population in Gaza. It shows the doctors, the journalists, many of whom were assassinated. And the text here is Izzedine Al-Haddad, who is now the Qassam Brigade's chief. Previously, he was the Gaza Division chief. And he says, over these many months of pain and bloodshed, our people have refused to surrender and stood anchored on their land. Our great people, who are unparalleled in all of the world, were the backbone of this struggle as they stood tall on their land, recording on the pages of history that they are a people who refuse to bow to injustice, offering everything for their homeland. We in the resistance salute your bravery, dignity, and honor. And that was Izzedine Al-Haddad. So that is the resistance report for this week.
That was the Electronic Intifada's John Elmer. You're listening to Electronic Intifada Radio with me, Nora Barrows-Friedman. On November 17th, the United Nations Security Council adopted the so-called Trump peace plan for Gaza. Resolution 2803 effectively makes the United States and Israel the joint rulers of Gaza, aided by complicit governments from the region and around the world. Craig Mochaber, former senior UN human rights official and international human rights lawyer, joins me and Ali Abunima. His latest article for Mondo Weiss is called The UN Embraces Colonialism, Unpacking the Security Council's Mandate for the U.S. Colonial Administration of Gaza. Craig, welcome back to Electronic Intifada Radio.
Hi, Ali. Hi, Nora.
Craig, you begin your article with this observation. More than 2 years into the genocide in Palestine, the UN Security Council has finally acted, but rather than acting to enforce international law, protect the victims, and hold the perpetrators accountable, it adopted a resolution that openly flouts key provisions of international law, disempowers and further punishes the victims and rewards and empowers the perpetrators. Give us an overview of why you and others are reacting so strongly to the resolution in these terms.
Well, I mean, obviously, this resolution is a real direct assault on the Palestinian people, on their human rights, on their hopes of liberation. It is